Jessica Duquette is going to talk to us about organization. And I'm just going to read you a short bio so you know what she's all about, what she does. She's a lifestyle management consultant and professional organizer. And she's based out of the Los Angeles area. She offers her clients and her audience a unique blend of down-to-earth life lessons, custom interact strategies for their bad habits, and tips to help the home or office flow more smoothly. Jessica's mission is to inspire people to reclaim their lost sense of power. She's found that once people reconnect with their prayerlessness, they can more easily release the mental and physical clutter that stands in the way of achieving their life purpose. Jessica works in person with clients in the Los Angeles area as well as by phone all over the world. She's always ready to travel with one of her dynamic team members to help create a one-week organizing transformation anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Her blog, It's Not About Your Stuff, offers productivity tips, musings, resources, and strategies on getting things done. She asks her readers the tough questions, presents assignments, and provides the resources to shake things up and make things happen. And judging by the talk that's been going on here, it sounds like this might be a fix for a lot of you.
is this on? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. This sounds quite up here. So I don't know if I can fix anybody, but I certainly can give you some ideas about ways to make your life flow more smoothly. And I have a deep secret confession to make, which is that I have never worked in an office building. I've always been had my own business. And so, but I really believe that the principles of being organized and how you live your life from an organizing standpoint are universal. It doesn't matter if you're at home in your PJs as an internet marketer, or if you're working in a corporation, or if you work for the county of Santa Cruz, or anywhere else. Basically, most of us suffer from the same thing right now, which is information overload. How many people here would say they suffer from information overload? Okay. And how many of you here are what I call geological filers? That means you stack things up, but you know exactly where they are by... Yeah. Yay! Go team, right? Okay. And how many of you people are incredibly organized, but your spouse is not? Okay, so I have information from all of you. Last year, I believe it was, about a month after, or a couple months after Katrina hit, I really felt that I had to go to New Orleans to help out. And I had lived in New Orleans in my early 20s, and I had always felt a deep connection, and 2 years before that, I had run a marathon there. I'm not an athlete. It was like an amazing thing. We came in last. But as my housemate, who was 58 at the time, who ran it with me, said, there are only two distinguished positions in the marathon, first and last. So we came in a distinguished position. They literally closed the doors to the Superdome. They were calling us on our cell phone as we were coming in, saying, hurry up, the guys want to go home. And they literally closed the doors behind us. That's an embarrassing story. Okay. So, when I got to New Orleans, I just basically showed up like with my bare hands. And I knew that there was a group of people that I vaguely knew, some of them that were somewhere there. And I located them, and we built a small, it's like a soup kitchen in a park. We just impromptu put up tents, and we started cooking. And it was obviously totally illegal, but since there was lawlessness happening everywhere, it was okay. So one of the things that happened was that people started showing up, and we were cooking for them. And when people eat, the next thing that happens is they eliminate. And of course, there was no running water, there was no bathroom facilities nearby because we were in the middle of a little neighborhood park. And what I realized, because I had to get on the phone and start making phone calls to all the red tape people. Believe me, when disaster happens, there's still red tape. I mean, it's like the most incredible thing. There was nobody in the city, and you still had to have permits. So, which you probably all can relate to. So, my point of the story is that what I realized, my job, I took it upon myself to be the person to get the porta potties. And going through all the maze of city bureaucracy at that time, which was completely insane, what I realized was that life is really about managing resources efficiently. And again, you guys know that really well. But you know that from like a county standpoint or a state standpoint or a federal standpoint. But what if you applied that to yourself on a personal level? That the way to be, to live your life most smoothly, to take the pressure off of you and the overwhelm, is to think of it that you are managing your resources in the most efficient way possible. Now, what are resources? There are lots of different levels of resources. Resources can be what I call units of energetic units. They could be dollars, it could be minutes, it could be calories. How we spend those effects has an effect on our entire life, including our relationships with people. You know, everything about our lives depends on how we make those kind of choices. So minutes, dollars, and calories. So if you have, you know, 35 emails, two people walking in trying to ask you a question into your office, and, you know, 16 things on your to-do list for that day, how on earth can you decide what to do, right? I mean, how many people have those similar type of situation on a daily or weekly basis? Not very many of you, or are you just not raising your hands? Raise them high. I can't see very well without my glasses. Okay. Yeah, that seems to be a universal problem with people working today in offices, is there's literally too much on their plate at every moment. I just spoke in front of farmers insurance agents at the beginning of this month, and they had that same issue where their file cabinet is completely overflowing. They have absolutely no idea how to retrieve documentation because there's just too much coming in all the time. And you don't even have time to make the decision about whether you should keep something or not. So how do you make those decisions? How do you decide what is a priority and what isn't a priority? And that's really the bottom line, is prioritizing. And I'm sure you've heard that from efficiency experts and all that. But nobody's ever really answered that question of how do you decide. When the Red Cross goes to an accident scene where there's multiple accident victims, they have to do what's called triage. Triage is basically just they have to make decisions. You know, who do we treat? We can't treat everybody because there's too many people here and not enough technicians. Who do we treat? And it's the same thing. You have to do information triage every single day. How do you make those decisions? By the way, one of the things that happens when a certain threshold gets crossed, and everybody has their own mental threshold, is that you go into overload. And what happens when you get into brain overload is you get distracted. Little things, like things that are easier than what's happening right now, start to distract you. Sometimes it can be a game of Tetris, or it could be a conversation with a colleague, or it could be some minor to-do that's not really that a top priority. You lose concentration, you lose your ability to focus and stay on task, and you forget what your goals are. So in order to avoid that, you really have to establish, and this is where, you know, the work comes in. You really have to establish your goals. And I don't mean specific goals, I mean general goals. What are my priorities? What do I absolutely have to get done? What are absolute musts, and what are things that if I have time I can do them? And that's obviously easier said than done. How many of you here have information retrieval systems or filing systems that are set not by you, but by, you know, there's like a common filing system? You don't have any say over what the titles of each file are. Not very many of you? So most of you keep your own files, is that right? Okay, well that's good. So when you're keeping your own files, here's a really good secret. At work and at home, you get to name your files whatever you want, because you're the one who's looking for them. And I know that a lot of people, they look, you know, they read books, or a lot of people have inherited filing systems from the previous person that was working. But you get to rename your files. And this is what I have suggested to a lot of people, is it's worth your time to steal the time from, whether it's a Saturday or, you know, stay late after work or just map out this project. It's really worth it to go absolutely through all your files, even if it takes 2 or 3 weeks to do that. Go through all the files in your office and do triage. Throw out, shred, delegate, get rid of everything that you possibly can from your filing system, and then recalibrate it so that it works better for you. Because that filing system is going to be a reflection and a resource that is going to either steal your time or assist you or give you time. So if you can, I would highly recommend to everyone in this room to go through your filing system from A to Z or from soup to nuts and just do triage. And at that point, you will have more of an ability to decide what is a priority for you or not. So if something comes across your desk, you'll be able to decide, do I delegate it, do I act on it, do I throw it out, or do I defer it? And most people don't even realize that there is a difference between deferring and ignoring, right? Ignoring is, I don't have time for this, and then it ends up at the bottom of that July stack that we were talking about before. When you defer it, you're actually calendaring it for a later date. It doesn't have to be a specific time, but you're putting it in you're being more intentional about it than just going, I don't have time for this, and throwing it off to the side. So what you want to do with any filing system is you want to create levels of importance. And you want to make sure, and this, by the way, this applies to any kind of organizing that you do. If you want to organize your garage, if you want to organize your kitchen cabinets, if you want to organize your clothes closet, you want to put the things that you use the most, hot and active items, in the front and the most accessible. So if you have a filing cabinet by your desk, that's where you're going to put the things that you're working on within the next week to the next month, if you're in there all the time. So you're prioritizing. The next level is maybe a file cabinet somewhere else in your office that maybe you have to get up from your desk and walk to, or you know, a desk just outside your office, somewhere that's pretty accessible, but that's not out of reach. And then the third level is those items that are archivable, that you can send off to a filing system that you might have in your office or somewhere off-site. And again, you can apply these exact principles to the filing system in your home or your clothes closet. If you use, most of us, you know the 80-20 principle, most of us only use 20% of what we have 80% of the time. So you want to put that hot and active 20% when, if, let's say you're doing your clothes closet, because some people ask me how to manage their clothing closet. If you wanted, let's say, to apply this principle to your clothes closet, you would just take those clothes that you wear almost all the time, your favorite things or things that you wear to work, and you put those right in the front of the closet so that you can access them really quickly. Then you might have the more, you know, I only wear this when I go to the baseball game or whatever. You can put those off to the side. And then you want to put the things like in California, for most of us, we don't have bulky winter clothes to wear. Some of us do, but in Southern California, at least none. Then you can put the ski clothes or the special items, you can put those like in the garage or in a remote closet, if you have an attic, somewhere else. So you can do that same, you can use that same principle of prioritizing and then putting things according to accessibility in any area of your life. So once you get through your filing system, you know, you've gone all the way through, this is a something that I like to add in, which most people don't think about, is set the intention for your file cabinet. As I said, a lot of people, how many people here have inherited their filing system? Quite a few of you. And does it work for you?
No.
Okay. So, how many people have inherited, like, ugly crocheted items and ugly furniture and stuff that's sitting in their garage or their house that they don't like? One person. Two people. Okay. Well, other people than you guys, a lot more people have those things. And they just keep them because they don't know what to do with them. They feel guilty, or they just don't have the time or the inclination to go and make decisions about them. But these are the things that are stealing your energy. When you inherit a filing system from somebody that doesn't work for you, that steals your energy. That wastes your time. That adds to the overload and the stress and the lack of concentration, and obviously it's taking away from your productivity because you can't find anything. It's not working. So it is worth it. You know, there's no magic pill. When I come and stand up here, people think that I'm going to somehow fix them, that I'm going to take a pill, I'm going to give them a magic pill, that they're not going to have to do anything to make things go, you know, to put things right. But there is going to take some legwork, some elbow grease to make it happen, and that is go through your filing system. And create it so that it works for you. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with labeling it wacky label names if that's what's going to jog your memory and make you remember. You can get as creative as you want because it's your filing system, and the goal of that filing system is to be so that you can be more productive and less stressed. And really, what a priority is, you know, when we were talking about priorities of having the things that you need, some people prefer A to Z. Some people prefer subject filing, and other people prefer priority filing. There's no right or wrong. We're not talking Martha Stewart here. We're talking what works for you. So if you want to file by A to Z because that's the way your mind works, do it. If you want to file by subject in alphabetical order, do it. If you want to file by priority, these are the things I use all the time. I want them right up front so I don't forget. Do it. One thing really important to remember is for most people, almost everybody, if you put something in the file cabinet, it's like you put it to sleep. You don't remember, it's gone. So you really want to be judicious about how you make decisions about where to file things. For example, if you need something that you want to remember, find a way to put it on your desk. Not in a pile, not in one of those geological piles, but standing up. Have you ever seen those little file things that you can have things standing up vertically? Have it there, because when you put things horizontally, they disappear.
Yeah.
Our brains can't process that information. When we start piling, things disappear. The only exception to that is, and believe me, they've done studies now that have determined that about, I don't know, 65%, something like that, a very strong percentage of people are what are called pilers as opposed to filers. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm both. A piler is somebody who prefers to have piles rather than to put things in files because, first of all, they might not work that way. They might not really be good at sorting information into files. And the other reason might be that there's just too much and it becomes too overwhelming. So if you're a piler, I have a tip for you. There's ways to make your piles more efficient. There's nothing wrong with piling as long as it's not miscellaneous. The minute you start putting miscellaneous piles together, everything in that pile is gone. So if you're going to pile efficiently. Make each project their own pile or their own color. I don't know if you guys have colored file folders, but if you're lucky enough to have colored file folders, use a specific color for each project, and that way you're piling efficiently. So does anybody have any questions at this point? Yes?
Do you have any hints for shared filing areas, though?
Because
you don't necessarily have your own little files.
Right. That's definitely... Can you be more specific, though? Like, what is the frustration for you about that?
Well,
that is a difficult situation.
There are three people in the drafting department where I am. There are certain files that all three of us access and file in. That, you know, it's like common things about, we do the GIS, so we've got GIS files. You get one person who's just a stuff it in, you know, kind of a vertical, I guess, piler. You know, or
right.
Alphabetical or, you know, something. I
date,
the organized
date.
One, and
yeah.
The other one just never knows. but what would be a suggestion of this overall system if you have different people with different personalities
right.
using it?
Well, that's a difficult situation, and it's very similar to when one spouse is the type of person that is able and willing to let things go and likes a neat, orderly appearance in their environment, and the other one is somebody who holds on really tight. You have to accommodate that it's like a family system that you have to accommodate. So what you can do, if it's possible, I don't know what the office politics are in your office, but if you can have a meeting and say, this isn't working for me because I'm really struggling to find things when I need them. What can we do to, you know, so that it works for everybody? And I don't know if there's a way that you can make a photocopy and keep the really important things in your office, or I'm not sure. I mean, it is a difficult situation because there
it's
is that.
It's not necessarily important. It's just, you know, data that's been put in there that later comes
so
up.
So is it primarily that you feel frustrated that it doesn't feel neat?
Some. I'm the organized end of this, so it's hard.
You know what? I hate to say this. It's, you know, a lot of times you just have to accommodate. You might be able to get the other people in your office to come a certain way, and then you might have to let go a certain amount. Because it's just like that when I counsel couples who have very different ideas about what constitutes organized and what doesn't. And I say, you know, you have to meet each other in the middle because there's no other way to do it. There is nobody's right and nobody's wrong. It's just different ways of processing information. And by the way, that's really, you know, we all process information differently. And that's why I said I have a client who has an assistant that they have to have their own filing system, because her assistant is very, you know, very rigid and very, you know, bright brain, whatever brain is, that's very logical. And she, all her files are the exact same color, they're made with a label maker, they're all lined up on the side. And my other client is a very creative type. She said that that would drive her crazy and that she literally couldn't even see the information in that file. Her files are riotous in colors, and all her labels are handwritten, and all her file tabs are in different colors in different directions. Now, that would drive somebody crazy, but that's the only way that she can process information that works for her. So that's what I'm trying to explain, is there is no right or wrong. For those of you who have to share filing systems, you have to find a kind of a middle ground that works for the most part for everybody. But if you have your own filing system, do what works for you. Do what works so that it actually is a tool. Your filing system is a tool for you rather than, you know, another overwhelming task that you have to get to that you can never get to. Did you have a question over here? Somebody else? No? Okay. The other thing that I counsel people to do is, how many people here have trouble letting go in general of stuff, whether it's files or not files? Okay, a lot of people have that situation. One of the things that happens is we all have different emotional values. And for people who have trouble letting go, it's actually a very beautiful thing. I mean, obviously, having trouble letting go is not beautiful. It can be very frustrating, and it can deeply affect the relationships that you have with other people, whether it's at work or at home. But when you can come to the point where you're ready to take a look at what letting go really is about for you, you can see that the same instinct that makes you hold on to things is the same thing that makes you a very caring person and a very connected person. All holding on is a misguided attempt to feel a connection. We all want to feel connected. We want to feel connected to what we do. We want to feel connected to the pieces of paper that are on our desk. We want to feel connected to the people in our office, in our home, in our world. We're all looking for that warmth and connection that we get from other people. But people who have trouble letting go to their detriment, people who have trouble letting go to the point where their life becomes completely overwhelming and out of control, and we all know people like that, people who have their houses that are stuffed full of things or garages that are full. I walk into people's homes all the time, and they show me their garage, and they're so embarrassed. I mean, I've walked into people's garages that you literally couldn't put one more box in there. There's no way. And it's emotions that are tied up in those boxes or in those files or in those in your closets, in any area that you have in your life. It's your emotions that's stuck in there. Are you angry at the frustration? Are you angry at what you have to do at work? Do you feel overwhelmed? Do you feel underappreciated? Do you feel resentful that maybe somebody else took your position out from under you, or that suddenly you were expected to do more work than you possibly could do in one day, but you don't have assistance? Do you feel rebellious? Does this remind you of a situation that you had when you were younger? Do you feel, you know, locked up in those feelings of overwhelm or other emotions that once you take a look at them, actually can unlock that feeling of overwhelm, and then you can make steps? And that's a little bit difficult. I mean, most people don't think about, you know, their emotions at work. They go get to work and they have a job to do, and people don't really want to hear about it. But even though you're not thinking about it, your emotions are affecting your job every single day. You know, all those things that I said before, whether you feel resentful, whether you feel rebellious, whether you feel grief. Did somebody that you used to work with leave, or did, you know, whatever. Did you take on your job because by default, did you end up there because you were placed there, or because your parents thought that you should do it, or whatever? I mean, there's a million reasons that people have these frustrations that are locked up inside them, and they don't know that that's really the place that they can look in order to unlock their feelings of their stuck feelings and their lack of productivity. So, and especially at home, you can find the same thing. If you are, a lot of people use clutter as a weapon. I can identify with that. people can identify with them. Three people.
Or if you drop their weapon.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. People can use clutter as a weapon because what clutter really is, in any form and in any place, clutter is your inner voice screaming at you. It's telling you something. You know, these piles of paper are saying something. So how do you make a decision? How do you choose your priorities? You have to find out what's important to you. You have to find out what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do. The bottom line is, you can only do so much in a day. There's 24 hours, or you're at work for 8 hours, or whatever. You can only do so much. Whether it overwhelms you or not, the same amount is going to get done. And probably, if you feel overwhelmed, less is going to get done for those reasons that I said before. When your brain is overloaded, you get much more easily distracted. You completely lose your concentration, and you forget what your goals are. How many people can relate to that? Does that happen to you, where you're just, you know, there's too much information, you kind of just go into shutdown mode? I mean, that's what happens to all of us. And so that's why I said we have to do information triage. We have to choose how we spend our time. So if you can, at the beginning of the day, or at the beginning of your week, or at the beginning of your quarter, make some priority decisions about how you're going to spend your resources, your time, your energy, your money, your calories, your dollars. And this, you know, when I say dollars, that means that you can get out of debt, you can start saving money. These are all principles about managing your energy. If you make those decisions, like, I guess you could call it a budget, although I hate that word, because most people, the minute they hear the word budget, they also hear the word deprivation, right? We just come to associate the two things. If you're on a budget, then you must be deprived. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a plan of action, and to feel so clear about it that you realize that there are probably going to be a lot of things that you're not going to be able to get done, but the bottom line is you wouldn't have gotten them done anyway. This way it's intentional. This way you can focus on the things that you have chosen as your priorities and allow the other things to just say, you know what, I can't get to all of that. I'm a human being that can only do so much in one day. And here's what I choose to do today, rather than just running around putting out the top of the pile or the loudest fire or, you know, other people's agenda. That's what ends up happening. If somebody runs into your office and says, hey, can you take care of this? And you actually really have more important things to do because they're the last fire that came up in front of you, we just get distracted and we start going to them because we don't have clear priorities and clear goals. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So I would like to do an example of somebody who's got a situation that they're frustrated by right now. Is anybody willing to be a volunteer? Somebody? Come on. Everybody is so happy at work that they don't have any problems. Well, what? Right? Are you raising your hand?
Nope.
Okay. We'll scrap that idea. So another thing, when you're going through... Oh, okay.
Queen of clutter.
Pardon me?
I'm the queen of clutter.
You're the queen of clutter.
I'm about to retire, so I really do have to clean out a lot of things. And I'm, you know, anticipating that. What's that?
At your office, you have a lot of things, but yeah. You need to close up shop.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the frustrating part for you?
I have to do it.
No, darn it, huh?
You're lazy, yes. You know, what things might be valuable and should be thrown away? And I'll just use this conference for an example. I have saved the folders and agendas from every conference that I've ever been through, and I've only missed one. Do I just throw that all away, or does that have value somewhere?
Tell me how you would think that it has value.
He's our historian.
You, it sounds like.
Tell me your name.
Mail them to me.
Linda, you brought up two really good points. The first is that you are one of those people that I was referring to before who projects feelings into things. Okay? We all do it to some degree. We all have a lucky rabbit foot or whatever, a favorite baseball cap that we always wear to play golf because it's lucky for us or whatever. But some people, that spreads into their entire life. And I worked with somebody recently who had 14 file cabinets in her home, and we whittled it down to four. And what we did was we found out what paper meant to her. And like you, she had the sense that paper meant loyalty. If I throw away the history of what I've done for this company, there's something disloyal about that. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, kind of a nice, pretty word.
Yeah, it is a nice, pretty word, but there's a gut feeling that's attached to that nice, pretty word. And that is that somehow I'm going to sever my connection with the things that I enjoyed or this time in my life. Like, if I throw that away, then what I did doesn't have meaning anymore. Right? And I was talking before about, I don't know if I talked about it. I use mantras in my life to remind me of things, because there's kind of two parts of our brain. There's the part that's logical and the part that's not logical. And sometimes you can use the logical part of your brain to talk to the not logical part of your brain. And I do that. I call them mantras. When my daughter was born, I read somewhere that sometimes you have to remember people before things. And I used to have, you know, I wasn't used to taking care of another human being when she was first born. And I have to remind myself all the time, people before things. And I would literally say it out loud to myself. I mean, people might have thought I was crazy, but I had to remind myself, people before things. And another mantra that I've offered to my clients that they really love is, do I love it? How many things do we keep in our lives that we don't love? Now, do I love my iron? No. Do I love my cordless drill? Actually, I do, but... You know what I mean? You can love your iron because when you need it, it's there and it performs a function. You don't. But with other things, like we talked about, inherited things or things that are there by default somehow, one way or another, those you have to ask yourself, do I love it? Now, do you love those things? Those conference folders?
I love the idea that the history that they're associated with for this organization got passed on, then you can throw them away.
Who else looks at those?
This group.
If we put together a little history, some of us okay. have been here forever, then they can be used and thrown away.
Okay. So they can be, and you can put them together like in a book or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's a beautiful way to do it. But see what I was talking about before about meaning. Everybody wants the things in their life to have meaning. And what happens is when you start to pull away the stuff that doesn't have meaning to you and only leave the stuff that does have meaning to you, your life totally changes. You are back in the driver's seat. And you inherit at that moment, you somehow, what comes up is a power, a personal power that you never knew you had. So if you can turn that box or file cabinet or something that doesn't really have meaning because nobody really knows where it is or it's too much, you've kept every single little scrap of paper, if you can whittle it down to the absolute potent pile and then put it together in a form that will have meaning for you and others, that's to beauty. That's where the power comes in. And that's what you can do in every area of your life. That's what I was talking about, the file cabinets. If you can whittle out everything that doesn't have meaning for you and leave that a potent pile of papers, that's where you feel powerful and you don't feel overwhelmed at all because you have a strong connection with it that's not tainted by overwhelm in any way. And by the way, I know that you said that you feel lazy, but I don't really believe there's such thing as laziness. I think lazy means I don't know what to do or I'm angry about something or hurt. So if you can slow down to find out what that means, maybe lazy means I love my job or I've loved the time that I've been here and I have ambivalent feelings that part of me is ready to retire, yahoo, I can enjoy myself and have my own time, but the other part of me is going to miss the camaraderie and it's going to miss the creativity and it's going to miss, you know, all the things that I loved about it, then you can see. Because then you can allow yourself to grieve. Because as I said before, all clutter is covering up grief, rage, rebellion, resentment. And if you can uncover those feelings and actually allow yourself to feel them, then maybe you can create some kind of a ceremony. You know, you can have at your going away party, you can have, you know, you can offer this beautiful book that you've put together to the group, and then you feel like your legacy has lived on. And it's not like you're just disappearing into thin air and have no meaning. Does that make sense to you? Does that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone else brave enough to raise their hand?
Yes.
in a business sense, to some extent, I mean, I agree with you about, you know, personal items, but in a business sense, sometimes you don't know the value of a piece of paper and who might need it.
Right.
Where I used to work, kind of the running joke was, sure, throw it away, but make two copies first. obviously, now we have technology. We could scan everything before we throw it away.
Right.
Well, how do you make a non-emotional decision about keeping and getting rid of? We're building a new office building. You know, it's a great time to clear out some stuff because we're going to be moving in January. My boss, my immediate supervisor, is a keeper. You know, he's got, you know, records for organizations that don't even exist anymore. Nobody lives anymore that has them. Obviously, some things are going to be his decision. But certain records we keep have a lifetime that you're not always sure what it is.
Well, I know that more and more there are record retention schedules that organizations have. And if you're lucky enough to be in a type of organization that actually has been forward thinking enough to have a record retention schedule, then obviously it's very easy. I know I have to keep this type of piece of paper for 7 years. I know I have to keep this type of paper for 2 weeks. And that's cut and dry. You don't have to worry about it. But again, when you're doing that, if you can remember not to mix archival items with the hot and active, I think that that's what happens to most people, is nobody goes through their files on a regular basis because it's not anybody's job to manage them. But what happens, because there's no time. But what happens is because there's no time, because you haven't carved the time, it hasn't been a priority, you end up wasting way more time. It might take 2 days to go through all your files, but you probably in a year wasted way more than 2 days looking for things that you absolutely can't find because things are all jumbled up together and miscellaneous.
Our garage is a perfect example.
Yeah.
We can't find things. This has gone on for years. My father, who's been dead for 14 years. I mean, it was a problem before that because we have multiples of the same tool because it was easier to buy another one than to find one we had.
Right.
Yeah. My sister is now taking care of this.
Here's the irony of that exact situation. You say, oh, we don't have time to clean out the garage. But meanwhile, you're working to make money to buy the things that you have doubles of.
It's a different time use.
Yeah, exactly. Do I want to work? You know, it's that old saying, and this is one of my mantras that I say to myself all the time, because I'm lazy too. A stitch in time saves nine. Honestly, if you can keep repeating that to yourself, if you don't feel like putting something away, you want to just throw it down on your desk, just go, how long is this going to sit here? How much time am I going to spend later on looking for it? I mean, this can flash through your mind in 3 seconds. But really just ask yourself, am I being efficient with it? I call it false economy. It's like, it's not economical to not take a weekend to clear out your garage. I just did a huge garage job on Monday with my team. There were three people, plus the two people whose garage it was. They worked 11 hours. They filled up three dumpsters full to the brim with junk out of their garage. But now they can park their car there and they can find what they need there.
But we're not even striving for parking garages. It's just storage. Garage means storage in some language.
I know, isn't it amazing? People forget that you're supposed to use your car to park your garage. It's a long, long, oh yeah, that's what that was for, that room over there. But it's the same thing with any, you know, in any area of your life, even in the office. It's like, you know, it's a forward-thinking manager or office manager or boss that says that we have to do maintenance. And that's the thing, you know, we talk about laziness. Maintenance. Everybody thinks that they can read an article by David Allen, the Getting Things Done guy, and suddenly your life is going, you're never going to have to do maintenance. Wrong. Organizing is not some magical state that you arrive at and then you're organized. What being organized is having systems in place so that things flow. The word clutter comes from the Middle English word to clot. It has the same root as the word to clot. It's a blockage in the system. That's all it is. So when you see this stuck energy in your system, you have to put your attention to it and go, why is that happening? You know, is that there in my garage because I don't want to deal? Well, For example, that garage that we just did, the guy's father had died 10 years before, and he was like some famous baseball writer or something. And he had 100 baseball bats, and he still wasn't willing to let go of one of them. That's stuck energy. That says, I'd rather not deal with my grief. I need to keep it stuck, covered, insulated from my heart.
You also get family white elephants.
Definitely, family white elephants. But you get office white elephants.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you all can probably relate to this. An office is just like a dysfunctional family, right? No, we just recreate it at the office. We go home to it, and we come to the office to it. Unless you have somebody who's very, very conscious that of keeping the communication systems uncluttered, because it's the same thing. It's just energy. It doesn't matter whether it's physical energy, mental energy, emotional energy, spiritual energy. It doesn't make any difference. It's all the same principles. It's a system. And when there's a blockage in the system, it's not going to work. It's not going to flow most efficiently. And there are very few people outside of, like, you know, Gandhi and Buddha and maybe Martha Stewart who are willing. And she's got a lot of people behind her, you know? I mean, she's like, I found out that show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, I lived in New York and they had one show where they did so many things in Brooklyn and in Manhattan, and then it's like, how did they do that all? And the paint's dry in the guy's house, and you know, right before he's going to cook his family, his mother-in-law dinner. And I realized, somebody told me, no, that takes 5 days. 5 days. And they make it look like it's, you know, they get there first thing in the morning and then they cook, you know, they're putting the parsley on the table, you know, at 5 o'clock. We have learned to have unrealistic expectations. It's not realistic to expect that things are going to flow smoothly without our attention. That's not going to happen. It's not realistic in this day and age, with all the information that flows through our lives on a daily basis, that we're going to get everything done that's on our to-do list. It's not realistic. So you can stop beating yourself up about that. It's not going to happen. What you have to do is make a decision about what is important and allow the rest of it to either fall away or be delegated or be deferred. That's all. It's that simple. The pressure that we put on ourselves or the pressure that we feel from outside is killing us. It's killing us in the form of stress. It's killing us in the form of job dissatisfaction. It's killing us in the form of lack of productivity because we're completely overwhelmed. Does this resonate with anybody here? Yeah, right? So what if tomorrow's going to come whether you get everything done on your to-do list or not? What if it was okay to just get what you could do done and really just allow the rest, to be conscious about what happens to the rest, either trash it, delegate it, or defer it, but do it with consciousness. Stand up and pay attention. And that way, at least you touched it. You brought meaning to that decision, rather than just like, oh, I can't handle it, and just let it go. That's when the stress comes. If you say, you know what, there's no way I can do all of this. I'm going to do A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. I'm going to give X, Y, Z to John. I'm going to give, you know, the other thing, 4, 5, 6 to Mary. And I'm not going to think about the rest of it because there's nothing I can do about it. There's no way. Yes?
Well, what if you do that and come to the conclusion that clean up the clutter is not important?
Right, then you've reached nirvana. And when you get there, call me, okay?
Well, that's how I am. I've got a huge set of clutter in my room, and there's other things I'd rather be doing than cleaning it up.
Well, then it's not a problem. Honestly.
Good.
I mean, if it doesn't affect your life in a negative way, in any negative way, then it's not a problem.
In the back of my mind.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Because when it's in the back of your mind, it's actually probably on the floor. Okay? That's where clutter starts. Clutter starts, and you'll see that in what I wrote there. Clutter starts in the back of your mind or in the bottom of your heart, and it ends up on the floor. The clutter is just a symptom. It's just the, you know, that's why I said clutter is shouting at you. It's trying to get you to pay attention. It's telling you something. We don't listen. But it's shouting really loud. It's shouting so loud that the people, our loved ones, are upset about it. Right? We have I can't tell you how many clients I go to where they are on the brink of divorce because of clutter. I mean, way more than 50% of my clients, that's an issue. Okay? So that might be atypical of the population at large, but I don't think so. I think it's a way that we can use clutter in a passive-aggressive way. You know, clutter is also about not taking responsibility, isn't it? That's why I was saying, if you are intentional about what you do, then the rest of it isn't clutter, it's just stuff that you have to make a decision about. Clutter is an unmade decision. That's all it is. You've deferred that decision or ignored that decision, and so it shows up in the form of clutter. But also, people take, you know, if you're angry at your spouse, and you know that they like things to be nice and neat and orderly, and you start leaving your stuff all over the house, that's telling them something. That's saying that what's important to you is not important to me. And that causes the friction and the resentment. And it's the same thing with your boss or your manager, or your, you know, whoever your superior is. If you have clutter, it's because you're telling them that you're not, that your priorities are not my priorities. That's a big one. Taking responsibility for yourself. I really struggle with not titling the topic of my talk, Shut Up and Clean Up Your Room. Because that's what it's about. Stop complaining and take responsibility. And that's really tough. Nobody wants to hear that. You know? I'm not saying that you have to do everything on your to-do list. What I'm saying is you have to make a decision about everything on your to-do list. Is it something I want to do now? Is it something I want to do never? Is it something I can get somebody else to do? Or is it something, I don't remember what the last one is. Or is it something I want to do later? That's taking responsibility. It doesn't mean you have to do it, it just means you have to decide about it. So I don't know if that answered your question. Okay. Yes?
I've got a son that has a cluttered bedroom.
How old is he?
18.
Okay.
And, well, right now he's kind of moved out of the bedroom, and my other son is moving in for temporarily. But my typical thing is your bedroom's messy. Do you like it that way? If you don't, clean it.
Right.
And, you know, I'm kind of frustrated, but it's his bedroom. He closes the door, nobody else sees
That's
it.
What I tell people. Kick him out or have him close the door. Just make safety rules, like no food and no dirty laundry that would smell bad. Because there's nothing you can do. You know, if they're going to be living in your house and they're adult, just close the door.
I'm trying to look at it the way you're looking at it, saying, make a decision about the room.
He knows.
Yeah.
He's 18. He knows.
Yeah.
He has to come to that on his own. That's the thing. Nobody can declutter or get organized or anything until they're ready. I have people call me up all the time and they're like, you know, somebody, their parents or their friends or whatever said, or their spouse said, well, you should get organized, but they're not ready. Because if it is an emotional issue, if it is that when you take away the clutter, you're left with what you aren't dealing with, then you have to be ready. And you can't force somebody to be ready.
Another thing, he works on cars, and I was taught by my father, the job's not done until you've cleaned up. So I thought, hey, I could just say that, and then that's all I need to do. Every once in a while, I'll just say, the job's not done until you've cleaned up. Now, I end up cleaning up after him.
Oh.
And then he gets the benefit of order.
Why should he? I just wrote a blog posting about this. Why should he clean up when you're going to do it? If he doesn't?
I know.
But
I have to live. I have to use it.
Then tell him he can't do work on his cars at your house.
Yeah, oh boy.
I'm serious. It's your house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's your house.
Yeah.
Yeah. You pay the bulk of the mortgage if he doesn't pay rent.
Yeah.
Then he either cleans up or he can't use the. Or he can't do it there. He'll have to find somebody else who doesn't mind him leaving tools all over. Especially if they're your tools. Are they your tools?
Well, gradually he's getting his own, yes.
Yeah.
He says that a lot of his own.
Yeah. Well, if he gets all his own tools and he doesn't want to, like, clean up the way you would like him to clean up, then just have him throw it in a, you know, just say, okay, I don't care if you don't wash them off or whatever, just throw them in that closet because I don't want to see them. And it's hard. It's hard to stand up for to people that we love that we haven't ever stood up before. But I don't think we're doing them any favors by allowing them to get away with murder. If you're doing it for him, there's absolutely no reason for him to change.
Right, right.
If I don't do it, Dad'll do it. Who cares?
Well, that gets mad at me because I can't find my tools.
See, these are the reason that people allow dysfunctional patterns to continue is because they don't want to stand up and face what they have to face.
Yeah.
You know, it's your responsibility just to set your boundaries for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's all. That's the only part that you have. You can't make him do anything. You can't have him be ready when he's not. But you can say, this is my house. You're going to live here. I love you living here. I love you. But you can, these are the rules. He's an adult. He's not six. He's 18.
Right.
And it's tough. I have compassion because I have a 15-year-old, and it's hard to get, you know, to tell her stuff like that, too. But the more consistent you are with that, and this works for anything. This works for coworkers. This works for anybody that you need to set boundaries with. As if you are clear inside of yourself, and you are consistent in the message of the boundaries and unwavering, they will respect it. You know, most people want to keep pushing to see where that threshold point is where they can mow you down.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the reality is, he doesn't want to be able to mow you down. I had a client the other day, and she lets her daughter walk all over her. And I said, do you realize that she's begging you for limits and boundaries and structure? And she asked her daughter. She said, do you wish, she said, you know, people have been telling me that I don't give you enough structure. And she said, they're right, Mom. I wish you would.
Wow.
That's what she said.
Good.
16-year-old, yep. True story.
Yeah.
Anyone else? I love it when people ask me questions. Yeah.
I just wanted to validate your work because we have had organized an organizer in our home. And to do that paperwork, I mean, that paperwork is one of the last things that I want to deal with.
Yeah.
The way that it's that it separates.
Right.
She sat me down for weeks and you know, just did that whole process.
And it was totally worth it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And then when we actually moved, my husband had gotten a list, you know, done the list, the inventory, and so we know what's in those boxes.
Right.
It's all numbered in.
Well, you bring up a really good point, and that is that most people don't do this because it's really too much to do on your own. I was at the gym last year, and I was watching this woman who had a personal trainer. And I was watching the trainer, and he was standing really close to her, and he was counting. And I thought, think about how many people are willing to pay somebody to count, right? Okay? But the bottom line is what he was doing was giving her energy. That's why we pay a personal trainer at the gym, and that's what an organizer is. It's somebody who's giving you energy, who's holding the structure. You don't have to pay an organizer. You can get a friend who's really organized. Just say, could you come over? Most friends who are organized, by the way, this is like a big secret, they love to do it for you. I mean, I can't tell you, before I started this as a profession, I used to go to people's houses and I'd, you know, go get a glass of water and I'd say, do you mind if I rearrange your kitchen cabinets? I mean, I loved it. It would make me feel so good. And they praised me for years. So if you have a friend who's good at it, ask them to do it. Or hire somebody. It's really worth the expense in terms of peace of mind. And, you know, like we were talking about before, just it's so much easier when a piece of paper, when the mail comes in every day, now you know what to do with it. Yes?
You want to be my friend?
Can you come to my house?
Here's the thing. I think a lot of people are afraid to hire somebody for a couple of reasons. One, they think that they're going to get judged, that somebody's going to come in and go, oh my God, this is disgusting. How can you live this way? And the other thing is that they're afraid that somebody's going to make them throw things out that they don't want to. And as you know from your experience, nothing can be farther from the truth. The point of hiring an organizer is not to make you throw stuff out or to judge you. I go to people's houses, and to me, I don't look at it like, boy, are you sick? I look at it like, cool, we're going to have so much fun getting this in order. Because people who choose to be organizers for a living do so because it's gratifying to them when the job's done. They don't mind the work, and they don't look at it like something bad. They look at it like a project. And as far as, I don't know how other organizers are, but as far as throwing, making people throw stuff out that they don't want you, first of all, you can't make somebody throw something out. Or even, you know, I suppose you can pressure them, and if they were not a strong person, that they succumb to the pressure, but that's not my job. My job is not to make you throw things out. My job is to allow you to find the stuff, you know, to organize the stuff in a way that makes sense so that you can find it, you can retrieve it. What's the point of storage if it's not done in such a way that you can retrieve it, right? Why throw stuff in your garage that you can never find and have to pay double? Yeah, to buy another one. There's nothing wrong with storage in the garage. It's a great place to store stuff, but do it the right way. You know, the basic principles of getting any space organized, whether it's a file cabinet, garage, closet, kitchen, whatever, is take everything out. Wipe it out. And this is the most important thing that I hope you will listen to. In that one split second in between when it's cleaned out and you start putting stuff back in, set an intention. This garage is going to store my stuff efficiently. This file cabinet is going to be easier to find things. Just take that one second, just set that intention, because it's, we all are energy and we're all connected. Set the intention in that space. It takes 2 seconds. And then start putting stuff back, but put it back in intention. How do I like it to look? How do I retrieve things? It doesn't matter what Martha Stewart said or what you read in a Cosmo magazine or Real Simple or any of that stuff. It doesn't make any difference. It has to do with you. If you want to go from Z to A, do it. It works for you. So I don't know how much time I have left. 2 minutes. One more question. Come on. Somebody's got something they really want to know. Okay.
All right.
One more.
I was going to just come to you afterwards. Like I said, we're getting a new office and we'll be moving. Could I get information from you about what it would cost to have you come talk to our office about how to facilitate
that? Absolutely. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that.
Okay.
I have a website, which all this information is down on those little sheets of paper. I have a website. It's inperfectorder.com. But my favorite thing that I have is my blog. If you don't know what a blog is, it's basically a website that gets updated frequently. It's like a conversation. And it's not about dry, boring, organizing principles. It's about resources and tips and things I found on the internet and thoughts that I've had about the emotional aspects of clutter. I think, Kula, you're signed up for it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's how I found
Okay. Yeah, so if you have a chance to go, it's www.itsnotaboutyourstuff.com, and it's written there. And all my contact information is on that sheet and on the internet. So I do phone coaching if you just need a couple of sessions to like figure out project management. I travel with a team. If you have like a super cluttered house, a team member and I can come and we can do what I call a weekend whirlwind. So there's a lot of options if you want some further assistance. Okay. Either put your name or not. If you want me to sign you up to be subscribed to my blog, you can put it on there, or you can be anonymous. But I would really appreciate it if you could just give me some feedback, because I want to hear how I can make this topic, you know, this talk better for future people. Thank you.
Things that Jessica, I can see myself in some of your pictures, as far as the same, but I hope you guys heard something useful.